Well, a third of the U.S. digs out from the latest mega blizzard. The remote northern Canadian territory of Nunavut had to cancel its annual snowmobile parade because of a lack of ice in Frobisher Bay. While northern Europe, the northeast U.S., even the deep south have seen unusual snowstorms and frigid temperatures for 2 years in a row, in November and December, temperatures in northern Canada and Greenland were running well above average, up to 15 to 20 degrees above. So what's going on? Well, now we know mainstream researchers are in agreement that greenhouse gases are warming the Earth, but trickier is the severe cold weather occurring in some regions while the Earth warms. And scientists are asking, could that be related to something called the Arctic fence? Justin Gillis covers climate issues for The New York Times. He joins us now from NPR Studios in New York. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
So this Arctic fence, or vortex, as scientists call it, how does it work?
Well, what normally happens is that the jet stream circles the North Pole, essentially. It's kind of a fast-moving river of air that runs pretty far north all the way around the Earth, and that creates what people think of as a fence or a barrier. And above that barrier, up around the North Pole, you have really cold air essentially trapped behind that fence. And so, of course, it gets cold in the mid-latitudes where we live, but not as cold when all that Arctic air is penned up north.
So you're saying for some reason it's not penned up there? Why is it not penned up there anymore?
So the last couple of winters have been unusual, quite unusual, in that the polar vortex has sort of weakened, almost collapsed. And now that has happened in the past, but not to the extent usually that we've seen the last couple of winters. When it does happen, then the jet stream can sort of meander north and south much farther than it usually does. And in that circumstance, you can get really cold air coming down and hitting, say, New York or Chicago or northern Europe. At the same time, you get really warm air moving up into the Arctic.
You compare it to a refrigerator door. Explain.
Yeah, people make that analogy that when the polar vortex weakens, it's a lot like somebody accidentally leaving the refrigerator door open, where you have cold air, you know, flooding the room from the refrigerator at the same time that warm air is moving into the refrigerator. So in this case, we've got cold air moving down from the Arctic at more or less the same time that warmer air is moving up into the Arctic and giving them unusual temperatures up there.
Well, so the fence might be the reason for increased cold and increased warmth up there. But what's the reason for the fence unraveling?
That's the mystery. Now, let me emphasize, it has happened many times in the past, but it doesn't normally happen to the extent we've seen the last two winters. In fact, last winter, the 2009-2010, that December had the lowest value on record since 1865 for a certain index that's used to measure the strength of this polar vortex. Scientists don't really know what's happening. There are some theories. They are particularly concerned about the loss of sea ice in the Arctic. So because of global warming, we've seen a really, really drastic decline of summertime ice in the Arctic. When there's ice on the ocean surface, that bounces a lot of sunlight back into space, and it cools the ocean and the atmosphere. When that ice melts, as it has been doing, the water is darker, it captures a lot more heat. And so one big question is whether this unusual amount of heat that's now moving into the Arctic is disturbing the polar vortex in some way and causing these weather patterns that we're seeing.
By the way, you know, how warm has it gotten in the Arctic? Give us a sense of that.
Well, the really unusual month for, say, northeastern Canada was December. It has cooled off there substantially in the last few weeks. But December, for instance, in Iqaluit, which is the small town on Frobisher Bay on the edge of Baffin Island, that is the capital of the Canadian province of Nunavut. In that town, Iqaluit, temperatures in December were close to 30 degrees Fahrenheit above average. In Churchill, which is a small town on Hudson Bay, it was about 13 degrees Fahrenheit above average in December. Now, average for them this time of year is well below zero, so if you and I were up there, those temperatures wouldn't feel warm to us. But for people up there, they're used to ice fishing in the winter. They're used to trade routes in which snowmobiles travel for 8 or 10 hours across the ice. A lot of that kind of life has been disrupted because their winters are basically starting so much later in the year now. Their winters are really starting in January rather than November. At least that's been true the last couple of years.
And by the way, are scientists pretty clear that that's connected to global warming?
They're not sure about that. It's clearly connected to this breakdown of the polar vortex, this weakening, really, of the polar vortex, where you've kind of cold tongues of air coming south and warm tongues of air going north. Whether that breakdown is connected to global warming is the big question.
New York Times science reporter Justin Gillis, we are talking about the reason for the above-average snowfall and below-average temperatures we've been seeing for the past two winters in the Midwest and Northeast U.S. and Northern Europe, while places like Greenland and Northern Canada are dealing with much warmer temperatures in early winter months. Now, scientists say this topsy-turvy weather is due to a breakdown of the Arctic vortex, which is kind of an atmospheric barrier or fence that keeps cold air up north and warmer air to the south. But what about the role that global warming may or may not be playing in sort of unraveling this fence? Justin, back to what some of the researchers are proposing as to why the fence may be falling on occasion. You write about Judah Cohen here in Lexington, Mass., who's looking at an increase of snowfall in Siberia.
Yes, he and a lot of other researchers have found an apparent association between snow in Siberia and the way the polar vortex behaves. The theory is when there's extra snow, that's reflecting a lot of sunlight, cooling the air down, and maybe that's perturbing the vortex in some way. The association seems to be there. Whether that, and there is an increase over time in snow cover in Siberia, whether that can be linked to global warming and the loss of Arctic sea ice is the big question. Dr. Cohen's idea is that the Arctic Ocean, now that so much of it is ice-free in the summer, could be acting somewhat like, and it remains ice-free now later in the season than before, it could be acting somewhat like the Great Lakes and creating sort of what you might think of as lake effect snow over Siberia. But we really don't know for sure if that's right or how the pieces fit together. This is all ongoing research.
Yeah. Why can't they connect those dots? Because it would seem, you know, intuitively, it would seem as if that would be a perfectly reasonable explanation. You know, if there's more warmth because of less ice, then that's obviously going to change things. And we remember hearing early on when there were descriptions of global warming, people were quick to say, yes, the Earth is warming up, but because of that drastic shift, that means that some places are going to have dramatic and even colder weather events.
That's true. That's been part of the prediction for a long time. That it's not, I think people tend to think of it as a sort of monotonic warming all over the place that's going to happen. That's not necessarily right. Remember that a lot of places are influenced by ocean circulation patterns, atmospheric circulation patterns. As those change, we could actually see spot cooling in places, even as the Earth as a whole warms up. And let's emphasize, despite these crazy winters that we've had the last couple of years, the Earth is warming. The 2010 is essentially in a statistical tie now for warmest year on record with 2005 and 1998. So there has been no let up in the overall trend of global warming.
Well, and you write about scientists who are trying to figure this out. And one of the things that happens is just when you think you've got a trend and you publish a paper and say, aha, we've got a trend, it goes away.
That's right. And that happened in this case. We had a whole string of mild winters in the 90s, well, ending in about 1995. And people published papers back then saying, aha, mild winters, global warming. And, you know, almost as soon as those papers were in print, the trend reversed and we started seeing some colder winters. And now we've had these particularly cold winters the last two. So the scientists themselves are struggling here to understand what's going on. And in particular, remember that we don't have long-term observations. As I said, one of the major data sets that we need to understand the polar vortex only goes back to 1865. We humans have not been watching the Earth closely for very long. And so one of our problems is we just don't know in sufficient detail what was happening thousands of years ago. We don't know what normal is, and therefore it's hard to know when we are kind of jumping outside of normal.
And everybody seems to think they have some sort of memory. You know, people, you always hear people saying, oh, when I was a kid, the snowbanks were this high. You know, this is nothing new. But could that be because this will turn out to be cyclical?
It's entirely possible. I mean, we saw in the 1970s, there were in fact some severe winters that were related to this same phenomenon, you know, the breakdown of the polar vortex. I also think, though, that human memory on this sort of thing is quite tricky. I mean, I really think we all only sort of remember about as far as last week, as far as the weather goes. And, you know, let's not forget, I mean, we're all now sitting in these cold New England and New York winters right now and wondering what's happened, but we've totally forgotten about the summer. I mean, this was the hottest summer in history this last year in the Mid-Atlantic region, and that's completely gone out of our minds right now.
Right. So what else do you think we should know about why we're having these extraordinary winters?
I think you need to put them in the context, the larger context of what's happening. I mean, we are having some really unusual sort of erratic weather events. I mean, remember the floods in Pakistan last year. Remember the heat wave in Russia. Take a look at the floods and the hurricane going on in Australia right now. The weather seems, at least for a period, to have destabilized. The big question is that just a sort of blip? Is that just an accident of a bunch of unusual things happening over the course of 1 or 2 years? Or are we seeing some kind of larger destabilization of weather patterns that is linked to climate change? More time is going to have to pass before we know the answer to that, I think.
And by the way, I hasten to say that the scientists who are raising that question are the same ones who very much agree that global warming exists.
In mainstream climate science, there is no question that global warming exists. We have long-term temperature records. We know that the Earth is warmed up overall by about 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit since the Industrial Revolution, most of that in the last 30, 40 years. There really isn't any doubt about it among the scientific mainstream, but how that's going to play out on a regional level and how it will play out year to year and what those changes will look like is a much bigger mystery. We don't really know.
And whether or not they have anything to do with the fact that you can't dig out your car in Chicago.
Let's wish luck to those people in Chicago. That's a severe storm they had
over
the last few days.
But whether or not it's connected to global warming, that's the leap they're unwilling to make right now.
They are hesitating to make that leap as of now, I would say.
Justin Gillis, who covers all things climate-related for The New York Times, thank you.
Thank you.